Greetings, this is Tyler McFeeters with your News Gazette, dated Friday, April 10th, 2026. We'll begin today's reading on the front page. State government, community college bachelor's degrees proposed. Parkland interested in its land surveying program offering possibility of licensure. Story by Jana Wiersema, out of Champaign. There's been a major shortage of land surveyors for a while, says Ted Hartke, president of Ogden-based Hartke Engineering and Surveying. One of the factors in this shortage is education. Hartke explained that a bachelor's degree is one of the eligibility requirements for licensure, but in-state options to earn a degree in land surveying are limited. Corey Allred, director of Parkland College's land surveying program, likewise said that there are very few opportunities for education in land surveying in Illinois. Apart from Parkland and Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, the latter offers a bachelor's degree in surveying and geomatics. Surveying tends to be a profession that non-traditional students discover later on, Hartke added. So if you're already in the workforce and you become interested in surveying, it's very difficult to go to a full-time four-year college on campus. But if Parkland College can help people get a bachelor's degree over several years of time, it could put that dream of licensure within reach. New legislation proposed in February would enable Illinois community colleges, such as Parkland, to offer baccalaureate degrees, aka bachelor's degrees, under certain conditions. Bills have been filed in both the House and Senate. Neither has made it out of its respective body yet. Stephanie Stewart, Parkland's Vice President of Strategic Partnerships and Workforce Innovation and Chief Communications Officer, said that while Illinois does not currently permit community colleges to offer bachelor's degrees, 24 other states do. Allowing community colleges to offer applied bachelor's degrees would be helpful in instances where an occupation requires both a bachelor's degree and training, but Parkland does not offer a transfer degree, she said. Allred feels that his field is a perfect fit for this opportunity. We have a very successful certificate program where students can get their required hours that they need for licensure with us, he said, and so moving to a bachelor's degree just seems to make sense so that we have another opportunity. Parkland also offers an associate's degree in land surveying, but this does not meet the requirements for licensure, meaning that students have to go elsewhere to receive the rest of their education before they can go to Parkland for their hours, Allred explained. Student Matthew Warren, 20, said he'd be interested in getting his bachelor's degree at Parkland if such a program existed. I could stay local, said Warren, who is working toward an associate degree in land surveying. I'm from Sydney, and so it'd be nice to not have to move or go to a different college. He also likes the idea of potentially continuing to work with the same instructors he's gotten to know at Parkland. Warren expects to finish his associate degree by the end of the summer semester. His current plan is to then take a year off to work and save up so he can go to SIUE. He said he'd be interested to know whether bachelor's degrees at community colleges are more affordable than those offered by universities. Under the proposed legislation, community colleges would have to ensure that tuition and fees per credit hour for the third and fourth years of a bachelor's degree program would not be greater than 150% of the cost of lower-level courses in the subject. Hartke noted that the flexibility provided by community colleges would be a benefit for certain groups. Besides non-traditional students, a low-income student also cannot afford to take time off to go pursue your four-year degree at a college that services typical students, he said. If an individual has to work and pay for and earn their way through college, they need to be able to take smaller bites of it. According to Allred, land surveying businesses throughout Illinois, as well as other states, have reached out to Parkland in search of future employees. Parkland has a very good reputation for surveying education, he said. Stewart noted that, in addition to Hartke Engineering and Surveying, the proposed legislation is also backed by the Illinois Manufacturers Association, Carl Health, local land surveying firm Burns Clancy & Associates, and more than 120 employers statewide. When asked if Parkland is interested in offering bachelor's degrees in any other subjects, Stewart said that college officials don't have a long list. Nursing has been discussed, but she's not sure if the college will pursue that possibility. The proposed legislation has been in development over the past 2 years, she said. The Illinois Community Colleges, in collaboration with Illinois Community College Board, the Governor's Office, and other university presidents, have helped to negotiate this bill language so that it accounts for concerns of the universities, Stewart added. University of Illinois System spokesman Steve Whitmer said that the UI system continues to monitor legislation in Springfield, but does not have a comment on the proposal. Under the proposed legislation, a community college would have to meet a number of requirements in order to create a community college baccalaureate CCB degree. These include, but are not limited to, demonstrating the expertise, the resources, and sufficient student demand to support the program, showing unmet workforce needs in a proposed subject area as demonstrated by a feasibility study, explaining how the program would lead to greater equity in student access, enrollment, and completion, entering into a good faith collaboration process with interested universities to discuss the proposed program prior to submitting an application. The proposed degree would have to be approved by both the Illinois Community College Board and the Illinois Board of Higher Education. In addition to the above factors, these bodies would also consider whether the program is redundant. The legislation would restrict most community colleges, except for the City Colleges of Chicago, from creating more than one CCB program within 3 years of the bill's effective date. After the 3-year period is up, most colleges would be allowed to create no more than one additional program each, subject to regional limitations. The bill defines 9 CCB regions and sets caps on the total number of CCB programs that can be created in each area, except for that of the City Colleges of Chicago. CCB Region 6 would be limited to 5 programs and include Parkland, Danville Area Community College, Lakeland College, and Illinois Eastern Community College. Excluding the City Colleges of Chicago, each CCB region may establish no more than one baccalaureate degree in early childhood education, one baccalaureate degree in cybersecurity, and one baccalaureate degree in nursing within 3 years after the effective date of this amendatory act, the legislation states. After the first 3 years are up, most CCB regions would be able to create no more than one additional program in each of these areas. According to a fact sheet on the legislation from some of the state's community college associations, programs in technical fields not currently offered within a region are not subject to these caps. Community college stakeholders also wrote that CCB programs must be financially self-sustaining and will not raise property taxes. And then there's a picture of a person out doing some surveying. They're wearing their bright orange hoodie. An employee of Knight & Associates Land Surveying of Paris, Illinois, works at the intersection of Jackson and Voorhees Streets in Danville. The next front page story is CU Schools Foundation Awards, Part 4 of 5. Alum credits lessons here to his success in Army elsewhere. Story by Luke Taylor, out of Champaign. If there's one piece of advice Andy Whitford can pass to school-aged kids with big dreams, it's to make a goal and stick to it. It's not all going to happen in a day, but if you take those little steps every day and keep the big goal in mind, I think it just makes day-to-day life easier to manage and easier to understand and easier to stay focused, Whitford said. When I was applying to West Point, when I was trying to write my dissertation, any other topics, just inside, can I do a little bit today for my long-term goal? Whitford says that growing up in Champaign and attending schools in that city gave him a good experience and support that led to his achievements in the military. Those achievements are being recognized this evening when Whitford will be honored with a Champaign-Urbana Schools Foundation Distinguished Alumni Award. He spent kindergarten all the way through 8th grade at St. John Lutheran School, where he said he enjoyed the smaller classes and opportunity to get a firm hold on the fundamentals of every subject he studied. In particular, teacher Randy Neiman left a good impression on him through science and math classes. Heading over to Centennial High School in 9th grade was a bit of a shock, encountering a student body in the triple digits, but Whitford says he's glad for it.
It's a very diverse high school, and being exposed to all kinds of kids from all kinds of backgrounds was very important to get a lot of different perspectives and see the world in new and different ways, Whitford said. Alongside academics, Whitford participated in cross country. Generally, he felt that Centennial was a place that any student could easily find their niche due to a good variety of extracurricular activities and classes on offer. English and history teachers Greg Stock and Kate Foster provided a great experience with combining their respective subjects in his junior year, and Whitford appreciated AP teachers Kathy Barton, George Valentine, and Ann Webnink in his senior year. All three were just fantastic teachers for high school seniors, finishing up there and also helping get us ready for college, Whitford said. Some of those teachers planned to be at the award banquet, and Whitford left a good impression on many of his instructors, at least according to his mom, Nancy Whitford. She says some have reached out to her since seeing her son was to receive this award and shared their congratulations. He was always a good student, more of a serious student than some. He always loved to read and hang out at the library, Nancy said. That's a part of his life that has remained a constant. A former member of the CUSF board herself, Nancy decided to nominate her son for an award because she feels he exemplifies some of the traits she saw highlighted in other honorees. Specifically, she's proud of her son's leadership capabilities. She said he sought leadership roles out in his sports teams and in the Boy Scouts when he was younger. That carried through to his time in the military, where he took on unique roles like a deputy chief military office position for the United Nations in Jerusalem. When people think of the United States Army, they don't think about all the international coalitions that the Army officers get involved in and how understanding other cultures and other militaries is essential, Nancy said. He's done that, and I think that's a very distinctive quality. Andy said he remembers reading Crusade, The Untold Story of the Persian Gulf War, by Rit Atkinson in high school, and starting to see a model of what he wanted to do as an adult. He knew some other CU young people who had been accepted to the United States Military Academy, West Point, which emboldened him to apply as well. Sure enough, he was accepted. It might be a simple concept, but Whitford said that patriotism was a huge driver for his desire to join the military. To be part of something that's focused on people, and not necessarily machines or numbers, but leading in that human dimension was part of it as well, he said. Whitford majored in history at West Point, then went on to serve as a U.S. Army officer for more than 20 years. During his studies, he had the chance to visit Fort Knox, Kentucky, and was allowed to fire a tank. That was kind of it. That's when I decided, okay, this is what I want to do, Whitford said. That led him to request branching into becoming an armor officer, which he was able to do. He completed two tours in Iraq and served in diplomatic and educational roles with the United Nations, NATO partners, and the British Army. After that, he earned a master's and PhD from Columbia University and became a respected military historian, carrying into a career as an educator. He taught at West Point and today serves as an assistant professor for the Department of Distance Education at the U.S. Army Command and General Staff College in Kansas. Today, he carries forward lessons teachers passed on to him that weren't precisely in the course material, like balancing the job of a teacher with being a good parent, or getting students engaged by appealing to what they already know. I would look at them, students, sometimes, and be like, I know you don't think I know what's going on, but I actually do know what's going on because, strangely enough, I have sat in here, Whitford said. While he has always loved history and is always happy to teach, read, or talk about it, he understands that plenty of his students are in his class as part of their curriculum for psychology or engineering or any other major. He does his best to connect his teaching to those other subjects or to experiences his students may share regarding the military. That's more effective than just saying, this is the way and this is how you're going to do it, Whitford said. It's making connections and getting people to think about things. That's something valuable about the military education, he finds. He and his fellow educators are trying not just to convey information, but to prepare their students to think and respond to situations that they can't predict. Being prepared to react and to change and to adapt as things happen, I think that's a lesson that carries over into multiple fields, Whitford said. And turning now to national and world news, Mideast conflict hanging by a thread. Netanyahu authorizes direct talks with Lebanon to boost ceasefire efforts, even as Israeli airstrikes threaten them. Story out of Dubai, the United Arab Emirates, and the AP. In a potential boost to Middle East ceasefire efforts, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Thursday that he authorized direct negotiations with Lebanon as soon as possible, aimed at disarming Iranian-backed Hezbollah militants and establishing relations between the neighbors. The two countries have technically been at war since Israel was established in 1948, and Netanyahu later stressed that there was no ceasefire between them. In a video statement, he said Israel will keep striking Hezbollah until security is restored in northern Israel. There was no immediate response from Lebanon, but Israel-Lebanon negotiations were expected to begin next week at the State Department in Washington, according to a U.S. official and a person familiar with the plans, who spoke on condition of anonymity due to the delicacy of the matter. The prospect of talks appeared to bolster the tentative ceasefire in the Iran war that has staggered under the weight of Israel's bombardment of Beirut, Tehran's continued chokehold on the Strait of Hormuz, and uncertainty over whether talks can find common ground. However, later Thursday, U.S. President Donald Trump appeared to cast doubt on the effectiveness of the ceasefire, writing on his social media platform, "Iran is doing a very poor job, dishonorable some would say, of allowing oil to go through the Strait of Hormuz. That is not the agreement we have," Trump wrote. Netanyahu's authorization of negotiations with Lebanon came amid disagreement over whether the ceasefire deal included a pause in fighting between Israel and Hezbollah, and a day after Israel pounded Beirut with airstrikes, the deadliest day in Lebanon since the war began, February 28th. Israel has fought multiple wars and launched several major invasions of Lebanon over the years, most recently sending in troops last month in response to Hezbollah fire on Israel's northern border communities. The launch of direct peace talks is a significant achievement, though reaching an agreement will be difficult after decades of hostilities. Hezbollah's continued presence and longstanding disagreements over the country's shared land border. The talks in Washington are expected to be handled on the American side by the U.S. Ambassador to Lebanon, Michael Issa, and on the Israeli side by the Israeli Ambassador to the U.S., Yechiel Leiter, according to the person familiar with the planning. It was not immediately clear who would represent Lebanon. The timing and location of the talks was first reported by Axios. After declaring victory with the ceasefire announcement, both Iran and the U.S. have appeared to apply pressure on each other. Semi-official news agencies in Iran suggested forces have mined the Strait of Hormuz, a crucial waterway for oil that Tehran has closed. Trump warned that U.S. forces would hit Iran harder than before if it did not fulfill the agreement. Trump expressed concern again Thursday over reports that Iran's military was charging tolls on tankers seeking to pass through the strait. "They better not be, and if they are, they better stop now," he wrote on social media. Questions also remained over what will happen to Iran's stockpile of enriched uranium at the heart of tensions, how and when normal traffic will resume through the strait, and what happens to Iran's ability to launch future missile attacks and support armed proxies in the region. Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian said in a message on Telegram that Iran's decision to accept a ceasefire is not a sign of weakness, but a way to solidify Iran's proud victories. Despite disputes over the ceasefire, it appears to have halted weeks of missile and drone attacks by Iran on its Gulf Arab neighbors and Israel, with no new launches reported Thursday. There were no reports of strikes by the U.S. or Israel targeting Iran. Israel vows more strikes on Hezbollah in Lebanon. Israel's parliament speaker, Mohammed Bagher Kalibaf, warned in a social media post Thursday that continued Israeli attacks on Hezbollah in Lebanon would bring explicit costs and strong responses. Kalibaf has been discussed as a possible negotiator who could meet U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance this week in Islamabad. The White House has said Vance would lead the delegation for talks starting Saturday. Iran had said Israel's ongoing attacks on Hezbollah were violating the ceasefire agreement. Netanyahu and Trump have said they were not. Trump said Thursday that he has asked Netanyahu to dial back the strikes in Lebanon. Lebanon's health ministry said more than 300 people were killed and more than 1,100 wounded Wednesday by Israeli strikes on central Beirut and other areas of Lebanon that Israel said targeted Hezbollah, which joined the war in support of Tehran. Early Friday morning, Israel's military said it struck about 10 launchers in Lebanon that had fired rockets toward northern Israel on Thursday. Israel also said Thursday it killed Ali Youssef Harshi, an aide to Hezbollah leader Naim Qassem. Hezbollah did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Threat of mines looms over Strait of Hormuz. Semi-official news agencies in Iran published a chart Thursday suggesting the country's paramilitary Revolutionary Guard put sea mines into the Strait of Hormuz during the war, a message that may be intended to pressure the U.S. The chart, released by the ISNA news agency and Tasnim, showed a large circle marked danger zone in Farsi over the route ships take through the strait, through which 20% of all oil and natural gas once passed. Only a trickle of ships have transited since the war began after several were attacked, and Iran threatened to hit any that it deemed connected to the U.S. or Israel. Ships appeared to continue to avoid the strait even after the ceasefire. Iran's deputy foreign minister, Saeed Kautibletszadeh, told the BBC that his country will allow ships to pass through the strait in accordance with international norms and international law once the U.S. ends its aggression in the Middle East and Israel stops attacking Lebanon. The head of the United Arab Emirates major oil company, Sultan Al Jaber, said some 230 ships loaded with oil were waiting to get through the strait and must be allowed to navigate this corridor without condition. The strait's de facto closure has caused oil prices to skyrocket, affecting the cost of gasoline, food, and other basics far beyond the Middle East. The spot price of Brent crude, the international standard, was around $98 Thursday, up about 35% since the war began. And more in the national and world section. Manslaughter conviction. Ex-NYPD officer gets prison term for cooler throw. Out of New York in the AP. A former New York City police sergeant was sentenced Thursday to 3 to 9 years in prison for tossing a picnic cooler full of ice and drinks at a fleeing suspect, who then crashed his motorized scooter and died. Eric Duran, 38, was convicted of manslaughter in the 2023 death of 30-year-old Eric Dupre. The ex-sergeant said he was trying to protect other officers from the approaching scooter. He is the first former New York police officer sentenced to prison for an on-duty death in at least 2 decades. I took this job to save lives. I felt terrible once I saw Eric Dupre crash, Duran told a Bronx judge, saying he did everything he could to attend to the man's injuries. I never wanted this to happen, he added, apologizing to Dupre's family in Spanish as a court interpreter translated. Dupre's mother, Gretchen Soto, wept as Duran spoke. Earlier, she told the court, "There are no words to express what I feel." Judge Guy Mitchell said he did not accept the ex-sergeant's defense that his actions were justified, concluding that Duran hurled the cooler because he was upset that Mr. Dupre was getting away. If there was no cooler, the judge said, Dupre would have driven by Duran and would have been captured another day. Duran was immediately taken into custody after sentencing. His lawyer, Arthur Idala, said he will ask a court to free Duran on bail while he appeals. "Nobody's above the law," a woman shouted in a courthouse hallway after the sentence was announced. Afterward, Soto and Dupre's partner, Pearl Velez, said they did not accept Duran's apology. Duran's union, the Surgeons Benevolent Association, said thousands of officers signed an online petition calling for him to be spared prison. "Today will forever be the darkest day of our profession," Union President Vincent Vallelong said. Duran's prison sentence, he said, puts in the back of a police officer's mind that they can lose their freedom for making a split-second decision. Next on the national and world news, convicted sex trafficker, First Lady denies ties to Epstein, his crimes. Out of Washington in the AP. First Lady Melania Trump is denying ties to Jeffrey Epstein and knowledge of his sex crimes, saying Thursday that the stories are completely false and calling accusations that she was somehow involved smears about me. Reading an extraordinary statement at the White House, Melania Trump said she and her attorneys were fighting back against unfounded and baseless lies in regards to her connections to the late financier, a convicted sex offender who leveraged connections to the rich, powerful, and famous to recruit his victims and cover up his crimes. The lies linking me with the disgraceful Jeffrey Epstein need to end today, she said. The individuals lying about me are devoid of ethical standards, humility, and respect. I do not object to their ignorance, but rather I reject their mean-spirited attempts to defame my reputation. The seemingly out-of-the-blue message came as her husband, President Donald Trump, and his administration had finally seemed to move past more than a year of controversy surrounding Epstein, especially as the Iran war had become all-consuming in Washington. And we'll turn to the history section for the time being. Area history. In 1926, a basement room in the addition of the old library in the University of Illinois campus has been mystifying students because it has no entrance. Rumors abound that it may be a dungeon, a place to store suppressed literature, available perhaps to curious faculty only, or that its inaccessibility was simply a contractor's error. Architect George White explained that there's no door because the room has no function. No current function. This summer, when the old library will become the College of Law, a doorway will be cut and a door will be installed. In 1976, the crime rate at the University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana campus has increased by roughly 5% since fiscal year 1973 to 74, according to university police statistics, while crime at the Metropolitan Chicago Circle and Medical Center campuses has dropped by 5%. In 2011, a distraught teen who climbed to the top of an old water tower on the former military base in Rantoul was brought down safely after a nearly three-hour-long rescue. It went flawlessly, and everybody was truly professional, said Rantoul Police Sergeant Dan Alt, who climbed the tower with three Urbana firefighters to rescue the 17-year-old boy. In international history, today's highlight. On April 10, 1998, the Northern Ireland peace talks concluded as negotiators signed the Good Friday Agreement, a landmark settlement to end 30 years of bitter rivalries and bloody attacks. On this date, in 1815, Indonesia's Mount Tambora exploded in the biggest known volcanic eruption in 1,000 years, one that altered global weather. About 92,000 people are thought to have died, including 82,000 who perished of starvation and disease, and 10,000 killed by its direct impact. In 1866, the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals was founded in New York by Henry Berg. In 1912, the British liner RMS Titanic set sail for Southampton, England, bound for New York on its ill-fated maiden voyage. In 1919, Mexican revolutionary Emiliano Zapata was assassinated by forces loyal to President Venustiano Carranza. And this has been the first part of our News Gazette. I'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette, dated Friday, April 10th, 2026. Please stay tuned.